9 afternoon on WGN. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Pete Zimmerman is the producer. This is the John Williams, and we appreciate you dialing in. We will keep you posted on the stocks, the jobless numbers, and all of the business news of the day for this hour. We start, as we often do, with Tom Gimbel. Tom joins us once again as the founder and CEO of LaSalle Network. You can visit thelasallenetwork.com. Tom, I trust you well. Welcome to the show.
Good to be with you, John. Hope you and yours are healthy.
Yeah, we are fortunate enough to say yes to that. So talk to me about the jobless claims. What's the trend here?
Well, I think things are, you know, we're in this state of purgatory right now. And we will know a lot more after the election of what's going to happen. I think what we're seeing right now is the effects of COVID and like what's happening in our great city and state of the new restaurant shutdown. So what the claims are this week is really quasi-irrelevant, and what we're going to see is that over the next 6 to 8 weeks is with the service industry being put into frozen mode, pardon the pun, that we're going to see those numbers really increase a lot. We'll probably see the unemployment numbers that come out the first Friday of the month increase.
Service meaning restaurants, bars, as a result of the governor's shutdown here in Illinois. That's in Illinois. I don't know how all the other states are doing that nationally, but Illinois has sure put the kibosh on it.
Yeah, so what we'll see is north of the Mason-Dixon line is when the weather changes and inside, even if it's at 25%, that if things stay status quo in a lot of northern cities and you can go inside, but it's a reduced number, you won't need the same wait staff without having the outside venues. So there's going to be an uptick in unemployment claims just as a result of the weather changing.
I wonder what's going to be the biggest driving factor then, say, for the economy, the stocks, or for that matter, these unemployment numbers in the next 3 or 4 months. Will it be the caseload of COVID? Will it be who the president is? Or will it be the reaction by these governors to shutting down whole counties or states the way J.B. Pritzker and Lori Lightfoot are in Illinois?
Well, the real interesting thing will be is if there ends up being some sort of class action lawsuit that the restaurants take up against the state, and or if they just violate the order and stay home, and then you get into the situation of is an executive order breaking the law if you don't follow it, or can you be fined, and what will happen there as far as what the restaurants do. I think the presidency will be an interesting thing with the election will be not only is it the presidency, but what happens to the Senate and Congress, and do those flip to their respective other sides? And if so, then what will happen with the stock market? I mean, Boeing announced today yesterday they're laying off another 11,000 people. So when we start to see the white collar job hits, and with the market fluctuating down yesterday almost 1,000 points, are we going to see another case of April all over again? And then how the market responds to that?
I wonder if some of the uncertainty of the election is what's driving this downward trend in the markets right now. This happened in 2016, too. Do you think things will stabilize next Wednesday or Thursday?
Well, I think it's a very interesting situation because there's two issues. There's number one, what will happen to the economy with either a continued Trump or Democrat Biden running the country. But secondarily, if it's Biden, then you have the issue of people anticipating that taxes are going to increase, so you'll have a sell-off in the market. And then on the other side of the coin, you have how they're going to handle COVID and will there be a shutdown and what will happen to business. So there's a couple pronged effects there that I think are going to happen. My guess is that they're going to have to open up the restaurants at some capacity because I just don't see how people are going to survive without having jobs.
I suppose another way to anticipate a Democrat in the White House, though, is that would increase in maybe the Senate, too, is although I'm not promising either of those, but if at least you had Joe Biden in the White House or a Democrat-controlled Senate, wouldn't that mean more spending? Taxes, sure, but more spending, more stimulus would be coming out. Wouldn't that sort of boost the markets?
Yeah, you're for sure. So there was an article written in the Wall Street Journal last week that showed that, or stated that, if there is a Biden presidency, that there'll be more stimulus money that on the short-term basis should boost the economy and keep it going. However, you'll still have, knowing that there'll be an increase in taxes, a sell-off in the stock market to take capital gains as a result. So I think it will be a short-term increase because more people have money to spend, and then we'll be able to get through the spring and the winter and the spring and see where things are at. But again, it's a short-term fix.
I got to run, but I just want to mention that last week we referenced your remote manager index, and one of the takeaways was that managers are micromanaging and that people tend to like their managers less right now. Is that a fair summary?
Well, there's an aspect of that. What people are finding is that remote work and working from home, the flexibility that comes with not having to commute is good, but managers don't see you, so they want to know more of what you're doing. So there's a greater sense of accountability. Now, the key here is, are you achieving goals? And the real challenge is, when you achieve goals in an office setting, there's usually celebration. When you achieve goals virtually, it's very hard to recreate that. So there isn't as much lovey, ooey-gooey, touchy-feely, high-five type of mentality, and that's what you're seeing in that index.
That's an interesting point, and I'm glad you made it, because we did remember that as well, that now if you're a manager remote, how are you going to reward? What kind of incentives do you create for your employees? And I think that's something everybody would be wise to think about right now. You can find out more at thelasallenetwork.com. Thanks for your time today, Tom. Let's visit again.
Always good to be with you. Stay healthy.
We dive into the tech world now. How are people finding pets via Zoom during the pandemic? And that news out of NASA is just fascinating. But let's start somewhere else first. Ian Schur joins us, editor-at-large, CNET. You can visit CNET.com. Welcome back, Ian.
Hi, how are you doing?
Pretty good. 100,000 seasonal workers to be hired by Amazon, huh?
Yeah, and they're all over the place in terms of the types of jobs. We're talking about managing customer orders, delivery, even robot work, because, you know, they have those nifty little robots in all of their warehouses that bring the stuff to the people who are packing. And this is actually really interesting because back in March, Amazon said it would hire 100,000 people to keep up with demand from the pandemic. In April, it said it would hire an additional 75,000 people. And then in May, it announced it would be offering permanent roles to 70% of that group of people. So now we're seeing them add another 100,000 on top of that. So it just goes to show how the pandemic's really changed the way that Amazon works and been so explosive in terms of growth.
So Jeff Bezos is going to get even richer then? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, he's already the richest man in the world, or he was a couple of days ago. I don't know how it always changes, horse race stuff. But, yeah, he'll get a little richer. But I think what's more telling is that we are living in a world now where, because we're worried about COVID and we're worried about going to the store and with the holiday shopping season coming up, I have a feeling that whoever is, you know, all these companies aren't going to be pushing you to do a doorbuster sale and congregate in a group, right? So we're all going to be shopping online instead.
You know, folks in Chicago are noticing on their Comcast cable bills that they're going to be paying more now for their TV because of the marquee network which carries the Cubs. They finally got a deal done with Comcast. They've passed the cost of the marquee network, the rights for the Cubs games, on to consumers through Comcast. Now you have to pay about $6.50, $6.75, something like that, more per month, whether you like it or not, unless you cut the cable. Somebody called our show yesterday and said that they're going to go with this T-Mobile thing, and I see you guys were writing about that too, right?
Yeah, so it's interesting because as the kind of cord cutters have been winning out in this argument, right, and more people have been ditching their cable, the cable industry is actually starting to show signs of stress. And it's interesting to see where this goes because a lot of people hold on to their cable subscriptions for sports specifically.
Yep.
But now we see T-Mobile entering into this stuff. They're offering a service for $10 a month. It will have 30 channels, including BET, AMC, Nickelodeon, the ones you kind of think of. And it goes up from there, right, including local channels if you pay more, but you don't get them for the cheap cost. And what I'm curious about is to see who signs up for this, because at this point, I don't know if people want another competitor to cable TV or whether they want to sign up to individual apps like Netflix and Disney Plus and Hulu and whatnot. So I'm curious to see where this goes.
A lot of people are sort of cobbling together this patchwork of different streaming services or cable or satellite to get what they want, and then hopefully they do it in a way that gets them the best possible price. It does make you wonder, though, if the big company Comcast model just isn't going to play anymore, you know?
Well, and that's the question we keep asking at CNET, right? Is that the argument the cable industry had a decade ago when everyone was talking about cutting the cord and this kind of trend started. The cable industry said, wait, you're not going to like it because we fund a lot of those smaller channels that you love by charging you all of this money. And if you go cut the cable and you pay for individual things, you're not going to get those smaller channels you love. And right now, that data, it's going to be interesting, right? Netflix still funds a ton of shows, and we see all sorts of premier television coming out of all sorts of places. So I don't know how it's going to play out. I'm really fascinated.
What happened on the Hill the other day? Facebook, Twitter CEOs were testifying about a number of things. They were asked about the conservative bias, that is the anti-conservative bias. How did they handle that? What did the Congress say?
Yeah, for the most part, this was what you would expect to have a hearing just a few days before an election. It was a ton of grandstanding, right? And you saw it from both sides. The Republican and conservative sides argued that social media and Google, by the way, was also there, are actively working against them and trying to censor them. And then on the liberal side, you had the argument that these people aren't doing enough and that, in fact, the social media companies allow too much harassment and hate and all that stuff, right? And all you have to do is look at what happened with the shooting in Christchurch, New Zealand, for example, streaming online live through Facebook. You see all these other examples. And so both sides have somewhat of an argument to make, but they're not interested in that, right? They weren't interested in a conversation with these CEOs. They were interested in bashing them over the head because it's good politics right now to beat up on the tech industry. And I'm not defending the tech industry at all, but that's what this hearing was mostly about.
People are trying to get pets as a result of COVID-19 and them sheltering in place. What's new on the tech scene about that?
Yeah, so obviously because we are in this weird situation that we're all in, it's harder to actually go to a pet shelter, which is something I would never have thought of. My cat, we had to take her to the vet, and we couldn't go inside to be with her, right? They just had to take her from our car.
Yeah.
So it turns out that the ASPCA and a bunch of other places have started doing Zoom calls instead. And what's really interesting is that, you know, people are stuck at home. Well, those of us who are not essential workers out there, right, doing the Lord's work out there. But those of us stuck at home, we're actually starting to think about having companionship, having more people, having an animal with us in our homes. And apparently, these new measures using Zoom, they're seeing adoptions up 70%, 70, in New York and Los Angeles alone compared to the same period in 2019. So this is actually working really well. And it's kind of Tinder meets a video dating service, but it's for finding a four-legged friend, right? Yeah. And I think that's awesome.
Yeah, oh, I do too. And you see so many people with puppies on street corners in my neighborhood right now. Last question at CNET.com. What are you saying about water on the moon, sir?
Well, it's there. So, what's fascinating is, I guess the debate over whether the moon is made of cheese is over, and so now we've moved on to water instead.
Yeah.
And one of the things, you would think it's so close to us we would have mapped it all out by now. We actually know very little about the moon, and we only landed in those little spots that we did. We never actually were able to see and chart the whole thing. And so telescopes on the back of a 747 just recently were able to take special sensor images of the moon, and they proved that there is water there. And so that bodes really well for this conversation we're starting to have about establishing a permanent moon base, which I know sounds like sci-fi, but we're getting close. And it's just really fascinating to see kind of the space conversation happen again. And I'm really hoping that this revelation will help really push us forward.
Hey, they're going to have phone service on the moon, right? Internet towers or whatever.
Why not?
It's Ian Schur from CNET. Good to talk to you, and we'll visit again next week.
Thanks for having me.
It's 12:35 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm John Williams. We're produced by Pete Zimmerman. Okay, let's talk a little bit about or with another independent business person in the Chicago area. Jill Evans-LaPena is the founder of Jilly's Jerky. You can visit jillysjerky.com to find out more. We'll find out more right now. Hi, Jill. Welcome to the show. How are you today?
Hi, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
So this jerky, which I've sampled here and is fantastic, by the way, is available at stores. Tell me a little bit about the history of your company. I know I can get it online. Your dad used to make it. When he passed away, you took over the jerky-making trade, huh?
So, yes, it started out as an idea in January, which was seemed at the time a fairly simple idea. I was just at a performance and an intermission. I was starving, and I bought a store-bought bag of jerky, and anyone who's had the luxury of having homemade jerky knows that those are two very different things. And so I went home after that and kind of was research. I just started researching how to start a beef jerky business, and I told my husband, I was like, I think we're going to start a beef jerky business. He was on board. I work, my regular job, I work with a lot of theaters and a lot of performance art, and so my clients were on board to sell the jerky during the intermission, so it really seemed like a no-brainer in January, and was a lot of fun to learn about the process. And they said if I got licensed properly, they would definitely sell it. And then, of course, the COVID came around, and we've had a kind of pivot. So right now, you can get it online, and a few small groceries have expressed a lot of interest in it. So I'm hoping to get into some small groceries. Mm-hmm. And then whenever live performance opens up again, it will be at a lot of theater intermissions, hopefully.
So this was your idea for a theater snack primarily, huh?
Yeah, that's how it started. I have a different job and a different company that I started several years ago and doing PR and marketing for performance art. And so it seemed, just like a fun overlap of offering this snack at intermission, because so many sweets are always available to people, but not a lot of savory. And I knew how to make the jerky. I just had to learn how to go about legally being able to sell it.
So then what kind of meat goes in there? It's locally sourced, right?
Yeah, so right now, my husband and I are making the jerky, and we've been very focused on doing local work. So we use Slagle Farm beef. If you're familiar with local farms, they're pretty popular in Chicago, and just spices from a local spice shop that we've gotten, and that's really all it is. It's just spices, which the ingredients are on the website, and it's very clear what the ingredients are, and they're simple and pure, and yeah.
I'm looking at it now. Beef and salt and onion, garlic, apple, vinegar, water, brown sugar, molasses, ginger, mustard, cinnamon, chili, clove. All my friends are there. I used to eat a Slim Jim once in a while, and I don't know where that falls into the category of this, but I haven't had one of those in decades. I just ate a package of Jilly's jerky because I was hungry. It's fantastic. This is really good, and it has a bit of a peppery finish, which I like, but it's not too peppery. It's not overwhelming. It's very, very good.
Thank you very much. And another feature of the jerky that is, I think, not as popular when you look for jerky is it's very thinly sliced, so it's kind of easy to chew as opposed to big chunks, which I've always liked, and that's how my dad always made it.
This would make a great stocking stuffer. But, there are times where you say, okay, I'm hungry, I want a snack, you get a cookie, piece of cake, something like that, something sweet, you don't feel great about that. And the carb-heavy snacks tend not to sate you so much as sometimes a denser protein like this. And I'm telling you, it's working for me already. I'm not going to be noshing now because I think a little beef in there sort of works differently. Do you know what I'm saying?
Definitely. And that's exactly kind of how it started, is I was still hungry, and the only option to me was, peanut M&Ms or beef jerky. And so I felt that I had a nice distribution outlet that is a nice crossover with my regular day job. Yeah. And Yeah, so we'll see how it goes.
Well, but that's it, and then that dries up. Now, we'll be back in the theaters, but maybe not soon. So are you selling it online, and how is that going?
Definitely.
How do you cut
it's
through?
Been great. We launched 1 week ago, and the first day we launched, we sold out our entire first batch, and so we hurriedly made a second batch, and we're filling those orders now, and we'll do some online promotions, and as I said, some of the local grocery stores are on board to sell it as well. So Toto's Market in the South Loop is interested, so hopefully we pass all those hurdles for that. And then, you know, it's a lot of me will be, I'll be knocking on doors and introducing the brand and introducing the product in ways that I didn't anticipate, you know, in January, but we're really excited about it and it's really fun. And it's, you know, a very heartfelt family endeavor. And so that also, you know, makes me smile.
You and your husband are doing this?
Yes.
How does he feel about being the production arm of a jerky company?
So he was totally on board, which he's not always on board with some of my crazy ideas. And when I mentioned that I was thinking about it, he was excited and gave me all the support. And so I've been doing all of the legwork and the behind the scenes work. And then Anthony and I are both in the kitchen together making the jerky. And it's a lot of work. I mean, definitely more than we anticipated. And every day something new comes up that we have to learn how to do and that we didn't think about before, like expiration dates on the bags and, you know, little things like that. But we have our checklist and every day we learn something new and we're getting it out there. So we'll see.
Yeah. And I guess you get the beef and then you slice it real thin. I mean, that's key here, right?
Yes. So we got a professional restaurant quality meat slicer. So that was a big deal. And then, we slice it thin and we marinate it for 24 hours. And, then we put it in our dehydrator, which, you know, we've obviously our dehydrator has, increased tremendously from what we used to make for just family jerky. So yeah. It's a professional dehydrator. And then we cut it. Each piece is cut, by hand. So we're able to see the quality of the meat and cut out any excess fat or anything that, you know, wouldn't be ideal to eat. And so each piece is cut individually, and then weighed and put in the bags. And right now we just have the individual packages that are available. And, you know, I think those sizes work out really nicely for quick snacks, and my kids absolutely devour it.
Yeah, no kidding.
Every child that I've met that has eaten it has loved it, so it's a really great family snack as well.
Plus one adult we know of, so Jill Evans-LaPenna, the founder of Jilly's Jerky, jillysjerky.com. That's J-I-L-L-Y-S, jerky.com. All right, individual packets, and then how much do one of these packets cost?
So individual, one bag is $6, and online you can do a 6-pack or a 12-pack, and the prices go down if you are able to order more than an individual bag.
It is delicious, and it is satisfying. So put me down for, I'll put you down. I will be ordering some of this, Jill. Well done.
Thank you so much for your support.
That's Jill Evans-LaPenna, and I'm not making that up. And that's not a commercial. Maybe it will be someday, but that's just good jerky. Jillysjerky.com. 12:43 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news. This is Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. United Airlines plans to start offering coronavirus testing for passengers before they board flights to London. It's an effort to reduce safety concerns and help recover demand for air travel despite the ongoing pandemic. United says the trial program will go from November 16th through December 11th for some flights from Newark, New Jersey to London's Heathrow Airport. United will pay for the rapid tests, but flyers will need to make appointments. For the first time, the annual Sweets and Snacks Expo will be held outside of Chicago. The National Confectioners Association moved the 2021 show to the Indiana Convention Center in Indianapolis. The expo will return in 2022. It's the latest COVID-related loss for McCormick Place, but the first on the 2021 trade show calendar. 5 months after putting its advertising business up for review, Walgreens Boots Alliance has decided to stay with its current global marketing and communications agency, WPP. Walgreens has been working with that company for 3 years. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Amy Guth joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We almost always chat a little airline business today. I wanted to start, Amy, with Southwest Airlines. We'd heard that they were going to operate, you told us, not just from Midway, but O'Hare. Do we know where they're going to land? Where are they flying to?
Yes, we now know where those cities are, that where they're going to be traveling to. And so they're going to fly to Nashville, Denver, Baltimore, Washington, Dallas, and Phoenix. So they're also, of course, adding some flights from Houston. So those are places where they're really kind of squeezing United's footprint, adding to these, you know, United has such a stronghold here in Chicago as well as Houston. There are also big players in Denver. So there's three places where I think I would feel a little threatened if I were United. They're keeping everything as is at Midway, but adding these to O'Hare. So I think it's going to be really interesting when we look at fourth quarter and Q1 of 2021 to see what is this doing to Southwest numbers? How's this looking? I think it's going to be really interesting because now, you know, a lot of, if you're a Northsider, it's kind of a hike to get down to Midway. But if you like Southwest, this might be kind of game changing because it gives you the option of airports now.
Starting what, on Valentine's Day, right?
That's right. It starts on Valentine's Day. So I think, you know, already it seems like there's a lot of buzz around Southwest, just kind of anecdotally watching social media, looking at how people are talking about it and thinking about this both in Chicago and in Houston. You see some travelers talking, particularly in the business travel space, kind of talking about, oh, this is easy because it's easier to buy one way. It's easy to buy, you know, sometimes it's a lower price point of ticket, things like that. Especially at a time when Southwest isn't really known for business travel. That's kind of a thing, these loyalty programs that American and American and United and Delta really rely on for revenue. So it'll be interesting to see if Southwest ends up taking a share of that business travel or it speaks with kind of that leisure travel market. But either way, I'll be very interested to see kind of long-term what this does for Southwest market share numbers.
We don't think about trade shows much these days. They just stopped, but... McCormick Place lost one, not to COVID, but to Indianapolis, huh?
Well, it did both, as a matter of fact, yeah. So the Sweets and Snacks Expo, which is just as lovely as it sounds. I think every time it's been in town, you always see people walking around the loop with these just bags and bags of exotic-looking treats and candy and all kind of, like, fun things that go with it. So that happens in May of every year. And this March, the first time, it is not going to be in Chicago, although organizers said they will return in 2022. Pulling that off in May in Chicago, they're not feeling optimistic. Indianapolis, in the meantime, they've had several events. They have a system by which you can have an event up to, you know, much bigger than we can, around 250 people. If you get approval, if you, the organizer, get approval from the city's health department, so you have to kind of work through them and make sure that you're thinking about it in a way that's safe for everybody who's attending, allowing for social distancing and mask wearing and all that. But if the health department in Indianapolis approves your plan, then you can go ahead with your convention. So they have had some things over the summer. So the National Confectioners Association, who puts this on, announced this late yesterday that they're going to shift this year, because they already canceled the 2021 one. That was, in fact, one of the first biggies to be announced that it was not going to be happening this year. So they kind of set it out this year. We're supposed to be at McCormick Place in May, and 2021 is going to be in Indianapolis. The plan is to be back in 2022, but, you know, I think it'd be interesting to see. Like, once it's harder to get something back, once, you know, easier to kind of keep it in the first place. But it really kind of highlights to me the differences state by state and how people are approaching COVID mitigation strategies. I think it's really interesting. And you know, I mean, this is a big convention, so it's another huge economic blow. It also, I think, really, if things for May of 2021 are already getting canceled, you know, you kind of have to cringe for what 2021 might look like on the convention calendar for Chicago when we're set up with so many of our hotels are so reliant on trade shows to bring in those big bucks for them and really a huge revenue driver for them. So, you know, as of October 19th, more than 160 events scheduled for McCormick Place have either been outright canceled or moved to a virtual alternative, that according to the, you know, Metropolitan Pier and Exposition Authority who runs McCormick Place. That number, all of those events, that would have brought in nearly 1.6 million people to the convention center. That would have been 1.4 million hotel room nights and about $2 billion, that's an estimate, but about $2 billion in local economic impact, which is really, you know, that kind of makes you cringe when you start looking at that and you know, how many conventions we've lost in that space. But it'll be interesting, you know, as we move forward, if then that becomes a wake-up call to officials and maybe there's a path forward with our health department. Who knows what the future holds, but that's what's happening right now with that one.
Hard to imagine Illinois going that way. In fact, we're just now shutting down restaurants and making it harder to put 50 people in a room, let alone 15,000 sharing handheld snacks at a convention center. That's the difference between Chicago and Indiana, I suppose.
Yeah, that's right.